On Longwave and DAB Digital Radio now, the daily service is led by Becky Silver. Here on Radio 4 FM, our book of the week is The Valley by Richard Benson. Winnie and Harry Hollingworth find that the jumpy, undecided period before the war brings them closer together. And by the autumn of 1940, Winnie is pregnant again. Together they watch the orange glow of the bombing raids over Sheffield, unaware that those fires will set off a chain of events which will have a particular and profound impact on their own lives.
It's a lovely day tomorrow. Tomorrow is a lovely day. Come and feast your tear-dimmed eyes on tomorrow's clear blue skies.
After Sonny Parkin, Winnie's younger brother, was rejected by the Merchant Navy in 1940, the paperwork recording his failed application was stored with all the other recruitment papers of men from South Yorkshire in a local government building in Sheffield city centre. In the December raids, that building was hit and the papers destroyed. News of this reached the Dearn Valley at Christmas and Sonny decided to try again. This time he went with a friend, 16-year-old Alf Hollingworth, brother of Tommy, and cousin to Harry. Sonny and Alf become good pals. They take a train to Bristol and sign on for a voyage on a merchant vessel carrying supplies to Freetown, Sierra Leone. Sonny sends the occasional letter, but other than that, nobody hears from or sees him or Alf for 2 years. On the 4th of May 1941, Winnie gives birth to a baby girl, whom she and Harry agree to call Pauline. A few days after the baby's christening in the chapel, juggler Jane comes to see her and stands gazing down into the pram, muttering a sort of prayer as she passes the spirit rosary between her fingers. "The first great-granddaughter," she says. She shows the little girl the rosary and lets her take it in her hands. "You know what it is, don't you?" she says. "She knows what it is, Winnie." Winnie looks at Jane and smiles. Sonny comes back home from the Merchant Navy in November 1942, intending to stay for a couple of months. He and Alf walk up to Winnie's house one Saturday afternoon, bringing stories of sea battles, U-boats and the people and towns they've seen in Africa. They are bronzed and confident, both seeming far older than their years. Alf extracts a map from his jacket pocket and shows young Roy where they've been. He takes the map in his hands as if it's been blessed and carries it across the room to show his mam. Winnie looks to where he's pointing, and then she looks up across the oceans and battlefields at Alf. They catch eyes. Winnie's always felt sorry for Alf because of his having grown up without a mam or dad, and now her gratitude for this kindness to Roy and for his politeness sweetens her sympathy. Sonny says they're planning to sign on for another voyage but don't have anywhere to stay in the meantime. Winnie says they can stay in the front room for a few weeks, if they like. And so they unpack their kit bags and bed down there. Within days, though, Sonny meets up with a girl he used to know, May Ward, and, taken by the strange, impulsive mood of wartime, they fall in love. Sonny proposes to May, and within 12 weeks they are married and living with May's father, leaving Alf the bed in the front room to himself. Alf does not want to go back to the Merchant Navy without Sonny, and so he too stays and takes a job at Highgate Pit. He works different shifts to Harry, which means that Winnie often has another man in the house when she's tidying up or doing the washing. At first, she thinks this could be a burden, but Alf is polite and amenable. He helps her to fold the sheets and clean out the grates, and he chats to her about the books she is reading. She talks to him about his travels in the war and about his sad childhood with his dad taking off and juggler Jane bringing him up. They laugh together about Backing's gossip, and Alf mends the broken things in the house. And this, in the hungry and unreal days of the Second World War, is how Winnie and Alf Hollingworth start to become something more than friends. When Juggler Jane dies, she leaves behind a brown paper parcel with a note in her will saying it is to be given to Pauline. Inside the paper is a smooth leather pouch, and inside that, the spirit rosary. Pauline tips it out and runs it through her fingers. It feels cool and old and important. This is the first object besides a toy that she has owned in her life. She thinks of a prayer for Juggler Jane and then pretends she knows enough people to have a separate prayer for each of the lovely black beads. One Sunday, about a month later, Winnie and Alf, who has come back early from the pub, are in the sitting room talking about Juggler Jane. "Closest I ever had to a real mum or dad," Alf is saying. "I feel strange without her, Winnie." He seems close to crying, and Winnie looks almost as though she could cry for him. Since Jane died, they've been spending a lot more time together. The radio burbles in the background. She and Alf are both sipping at the cups of Nescafe when Pauline comes in. "Can I have some coffee?" she asks. "Aye, go on then," says Winnie. "While I do it, fetch your rosary and show it to our Alf." The two adults pore over the rosary as Pauline drinks her coffee. When she's finished, Winnie tells her to go out and play. When she gets back to the house, Alf has gone. Winnie is sitting on the settee, staring into space. She looks at Pauline but says nothing. Pauline senses the absence in the room before she even asks. "Where's my rosary, ma'am?" "I've given it to our Alf." Her daughter can hear the guilty embarrassment in her voice. "Jane was like a mother to him and you don't want it."
"I do want it."
Pauline is not supposed to argue with adults, but this time she don't care. Winnie scoffs.
"What do you want that for?"
"Can I have it back?"
"Don't you dare ask him for it back. You'll feel the back of my hand if you do."
Pauline will remember this moment all her life. Relating the story to her own grown-up children 50 years later, she will feel the same keenness as she does now. She knows that her mother has taken the rosary because she wants to give a gift to Alf, and that she had to take from Pauline because she had nothing of her own to give him, and no one else she could take from. Pauline is so furious that she barely speaks to her mum for a month. When she awakes early one morning, when her dad is on earlies at the pit, and comes downstairs to see her nightgowned mother slipping into the front room, the room that contains Alf's bed, she thinks nothing of it, beyond being reminded that her mam has taken the most beautiful object she has ever seen. One evening later that summer, Winnie is filling a bucket with coal at the Hollingworth's brick bunker when she sees Alf come into the yard from the backings. He smiles at her.
"Let me carry that for the win."
"Thank you, love. What have you done to your hand?"
His right hand and wrist are heavily bandaged.
"I brought me thumb at pit, trapped it in some belt in its knout."
Win takes the hand in hers.
"It don't look like knout."
"Sorry, they strapped it up for me."
He reaches for the bucket handle, and they stand for a moment. The house is empty. Harry at the club, Roy out cycling, Pauline playing in the backings. Alf places the coal by the hearth and goes over to her as she fills the kettle in the kitchen. He does not touch her, and she does not speak. "Is they all right, Winnie?" She stares into the sink. He seems to know before she says it. After she tells him, they're quiet.
"Is the sure it's..."
"No, I think so, but I don't know."
She doesn't know, and she never will. The child she's carrying could be Harry's, but she wants it to be Alf's.
"Well, that's good enough for me."
"What do you mean?"
I love you, Winnie. I want us to go away, get married. She does not cry. Her experience and her nature have made her almost vain about her endurance in the way that some women can be vain about beauty. She had borne her father's belt across her bare back, and she would bear this. We could go to coast, or go and get a little house in Nottingham. Our Harry doesn't deserve thee, so why should I have to stay? He is, she thinks, a young man. 26 to her 39 years. He has a childishness that she both pities and covets. I can't leave my kids. It don't matter what Harry's like. You can't ask me to do that, love. One day, when they're grown up, come back and fetch me. I will. Will you? Yes, he says. I will. I promise. They reach the end of the conversation sooner than either would have guessed. Moving away from the window, they embrace. It is ending so quickly, far more quickly than it would in one of Winnie's novels. I shall go and tell Harry now, he says. And then I shall go away until I come to get thee. Alf pushes through the club doors into roaring noise, heat and smoke. He finds Harry at the bar, performing to a small, laughing crowd. Alf leans in and says, I need a word, Harry. Serious. Bloody hell, says Harry. Wait here, lads. I'm just going to consult my stockbroker. They move away from the bar to a less crowded area near the billiard table. Harry looks bemused. Alf lowers his voice and says, Harry, Winnie's pregnant, and it's mine. Harry places his pint glass on a table and wipes his mouth. He says nothing. It is Alf who cracks first. Look, I've a broken thumb. If they wants to go outside, I'll fight thee with one hand behind me back. That's fair, because it's what I deserve. Harry studies his young cousin as someone might study a small child threatening to fight an adult. I don't want to go outside, Alf. What I want is for thee to get out of my sight. Well, I will then. But I'll tell thee one more thing. I've asked her to come away with me, but she won't come because of kids. So I'll go away from her, and you won't see me again, and I shan't tell anyone about any of it. That's right big of you, cousin. But there's one more thing, Harry. If you lay one finger on her or them kids, I shall find out and I shall come back and I shall kill thee. I mean it. Get out. I mean it, Harry. Out. Alf leaves the Dearne Valley, taking the spirit rosary with him. Knowing the baby may be his, Harry accepts it as his own. Winnie believes Alf will come back. His vow is a promise of salvation, the child an embodiment of that promise. She tells this to no one until 1958, when she confesses to a new friend that, whatever Harry thinks, she has for 10 years been thinking of the day in the far-off future when Alf will return to rescue her.
Richard Stacey was reading from The Valley by Richard Benson. It's abridged and produced by Jill Waters, and it's a Waters Company production for BBC Radio 4. This week's Woman's Hour Takeover continues after the news, and talking of takeovers...
The future inside the workplace.
I look at every human being with whom I come in contact and I ask the question, will this person be replaced by a robot?
The future outside the workplace.
High levels, particularly of youth unemployment, mean that simply educating more individuals for unemployment is not going to solve the inequality problem.
The future shaped by technology.
In a world where all the output will be produced by robots, the key question is who owns the robot?
The future is not what it used to be on BBC Radio 4 next Tuesday morning at 9.